From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. The city of Boise wants to rewrite the zoning code that governs how and where new buildings will happen. It's the first major rewrite of the code in years, and it will reshape how things like houses and apartments, as well as other buildings, are built in Idaho's capital city. Now, city officials say the new code is needed to better guide growth and to create more affordable housing. Opponents, though, say the proposal would change the shape of residential neighborhoods, and it favors developers over neighbors. The new code will come under scrutiny starting tonight as the Boise Planning and Zoning Commission begins 4 days of public hearings on this rewrite. And we wanted to find out what the code says and how folks feel about it. So we decided to turn to the experts who have been writing about this code for months now. Joining us today are Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, and Margaret Carmel, senior reporter with BoiseDev.com. I want to welcome both of you back to the program.
Hi there.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so Don, can I start with you? How did this rewrite process get started? Because my understanding is that this goes beyond this current administration in Boise City Hall.
Yeah, in some ways, the idea to revamp the zoning code goes back to the early 2010s when the city of Boise adopted what's called Blueprint Boise. Blueprint Boise is the comprehensive plan for the city that lays out the vision for how land should be used, what goes where should we have offices and drive-throughs and houses and multifamily. The city, starting in the late part of the last decade, decided it was time to then rewrite what's called the zoning code. The zoning code are the laws and ordinances that actually put the comprehensive plan into action. The last time the code was completely rewritten was in the late 1960s. Now, Don't leave that impression in your head that the code is a 1960s era thing, because it's been modified many, many times over the years, including just recently, about 2 years ago. But towards the tail end of the Beter administration, they decided it was time to get to work on redoing this. They formed a committee of about 16 to 20 people in the waning days of the Beter administration. Of course, people remember that he was running for re-election, but ultimately the voters chose to instead elect Lauren McClain, who's the current mayor. Mm-hmm. When she came into office, she took that committee and said, you know what, we're going to make some changes here, and opened up applications for the committee. So they started work on that in 2019, and here we are, 2020 rather, and here we are just about 3+ years later. And they have a draft for the public to consume.
Okay, so Margaret, without getting too technical, because this proposed zoning code, my understanding is it's more than 600 pages long. So let's not go into the weeds, but with that said, what are the major changes that are outlined in this rewrite?
So first, I just want to set the table with a quick 2-sentence explanation of why this matters. If you've ever considered why your house cannot be built next to a giant factory or a massive office building or something, that's zoning. Those are the rules that define everything about what our community looks like. And I mean everything. Sidewalk width, trees, house, how far your house is set back from the road. That's how granular we are getting in this document. And these 600 pages, it goes into every detail about lot sizes, amenities, where parking can be, how much parking is going to be required for different projects, what kinds of things can be located in neighborhoods, how tall buildings can be. It's very detailed. And there's also a lot on the process of how things are approved. If you want to build something, you know, that goes through a process, and this zoning code is going to amend that as well. And so it's, this is the nerdiest of the nerd stuff here.
Okay. So with that said, and I really appreciate that explanation, Margaret, because I think it just allows everyone to kind of have that visual picture. So when you waded through this 600+ page document, what were the changes that people are really maybe, you know, for or against, because they could be some major changes.
Right. So the big thing that this document does, and you're going to hear the word upzone that's going to be used by some people who are opposed to it, is it makes it easier to build denser projects, taller buildings, more apartments on certain lots. It makes the required lot size of certain houses smaller. Basically, the concept is, how do we get more housing into the city than we have now to house everyone in a compact way, as opposed to forcing people to go way out to star? That's the city's perspective. And so some of these major changes that you're going to see are, you know, 6 or 7 story buildings are going to be allowed on big transit corridors like Fairview and Vista and State Street. Especially, they want a lot of density on State Street. And it also allows builders to build fourplex, up to 4 units on most parcels in the city. So where you maybe right now can only build a duplex on about half of the neighborhood land in the city, this would allow you to build a fourplex. But, and there's a big but with this, this code still, it wouldn't override HOA rules. And a lot of HOAs say no duplexes, no fourplexes. It wouldn't override those rules. And it would also say, if you're going to build more, if you're going to build a triplex or a fourplex, 2 of those units have to rent to people that are making less than 80% of the area median income, you know, less than the average income. And frankly, those requirements on developers to build a brand new unit and turn around and rent it at a reduced rate, that's going to chill a lot of the urge from most developers to knock down a single family house and build a fourplex. There's a lot of people who are really concerned about this proposal. They're concerned about older units that are renting for cheap, getting, you know, displaced by more expensive units, people's single family homes getting sort of taken down and put up fourplexes next door. You know, that there's a lot of feelings about that. And really what we're going to see is likely a lot of major change in downtown. There's no height limit in downtown Boise like there is now.
Current height limit. Yeah. So there's not a current height limit downtown. Downtown buildings can go as high as they want now. Downtown actually probably has the least change in the code. It's the transit quarters and the neighborhoods that I think are the big focus for the changes here.
Great context, Don. Thanks for keeping me on track. So what we're going to see is a lot of major change in some areas, like these major transit corridors, but there are a lot of requirements here that likely will disincentivize developers from coming into a random neighborhood, bulldozing an existing home and putting up a fourplex. It's expensive to tear down existing buildings. And a lot of developers, you know, they don't like to do it unless they know they can make a lot of profit.
Okay, so let's talk also about the code and what's called mixed use. This is mixing residential and commercial use. So, Don, we've seen a little bit of this in the Treasure Valley, not a lot. It's tending to become more common in bigger cities. How are people feeling about that? Because my understanding is you usually see a lot of this more mixed use in really more urban areas of cities.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the mixed use kind of goes both ways. So the code makes changes to many residential neighborhoods to allow some commercial use. That could include something like a neighborhood cafe, a retail space under 2,000 square feet. Those generally are not allowed in what are called residential neighborhoods right now. They're strictly for homes. Folks who are unhappy about the zoning code have made arguments that it's inappropriate perhaps to have, you know, a neighborhood cafe that sells alcohol in their neighborhood. I think each individual has to decide whether they think that's a plus or a minus. And people I've talked to, some people are like, well, yeah, I'd love to have a neighborhood cafe in my neighborhood. And some people are like, no, that's terrible to keep that away. The mixing is going to be more predominantly found in what are currently called commercial zones. And the city with the code is working to try and weave together a a number of uses into one area. And you could think of this as common in larger cities, cities in Europe, certainly, for instance. If you've traveled to throughout Europe, you see that those things are all kind of jumbled together, where in America, they're largely pulled apart. And so we're talking a lot about these transit corridors here. And if you think about the way Boise works now, those kind of 1 mile apart roads, you know, you've got Vista and then Orchard and then Cole. Those streets are already major transit corridors. Boise has grown in a way that, you know, you go back decades, and mostly what you saw along Vista Avenue, for instance, was single family homes. Over time, that started to transition to, you know, maybe a shopping center, maybe some of those older, smaller homes turned into, you know, an office use. Mm-hmm. Part of that's because the traffic increased on the road, the sound increased on the road, and people prefer generally to have a single family home not front onto a busy street. Now what we're starting to see, even before the zoning code rewrite goes in, are those corridors transitioning to more and more multifamily use. A lot of what the city has said this is driven by is the need to build more housing. The city has kind of put its stake down and said, we've got a lot of people moving here. How do we help accommodate them so that we can help bring down both the price of a single family home, but the price of rent? And so this idea is, if we can add density both along the corridors and in neighborhoods, that might help. The city's using this phrase that they call the missing middle. And this is a little, I think, controversial, but what they're saying right now is that there isn't a lot of housing stock that's available for people who make in the kind of the median income range of the city's population. They think that these types of changes could make it easier for those types of homes to be built and made available. And Margaret alluded to this. I think there's a lot of question, especially in these residential neighborhoods. She hit on this idea of a lot of neighborhoods, particularly those built in the 80s, 90s, and 2000s in Boise, have these restrictive covenants placed on the properties. And this gets conflated with HOA a little bit, and they are sort of related, but the CC&Rs on properties often limit what can be done with that property in perpetuity. The city has chosen not to override that, meaning if you live in a neighborhood, say in Southeast Boise, and there's a covenant restriction that says, you know, you can't replace your home with a duplex, triplex, or fourplex, or you can't do this, you can't do that. The city has stepped back and said, hey, we're not going to interfere with that. And what's interesting is there's actually kind of two camps on this whole process. There's this Reject Boise Upzone group, which is very much against the zoning code rewrite. And then there's also a group of people who say that we need more housing. They are somewhat commonly referred to as YIMBYs, for yes in my backyard. And we've actually seen frustration from them that the city isn't going to try and impede on the CC&Rs. At the end of the day, the code is designed, in the city's view, to add more housing. Opponents, particularly those from kind of the more NIMBY side, the not in my backyard side, say, wow, we're changing too fast and this is going to make it worse, and are pointing to other cities as some problems. But there's a lot to this. And I want to make one more point. And that is, this is a 611-page document. It's 200,000 words and it's very thick. It's hard to get through, and people are really trying to navigate that. And I think that's been a struggle in communication and in sort of all of this information that's surrounding this.
Right. Well, and frankly, probably understanding when something is that big, right? I do need to take a break, but before I get to the break, Margaret, I do want to bring up something. And that is, you know, when Dawn mentioned these CC&Rs, right? And the city saying, nope, we're not going to touch that. These are in place. I know that you've been doing research on other cities around the country who really haven't taken that approach. So tell us a little bit about what you have found out in regards to that. Because when I think about the fact the city backing off on that, it does in a way say, you know, we value the way these neighborhoods are. We're not going to come in and you know, let anybody just do whatever they want. But that's not always necessarily been the case in other areas.
Right. This idea of loosening zoning requirements to build more housing has caught fire in the last couple of years. Cities, Minneapolis did it a number of years ago, and they allowed, I believe, up to a fourplex on every lot, and that had no requirements on it, although they do have some other affordability stuff that Idaho doesn't allow. But mm-hmm. in terms of Minneapolis, anything could just be a fourplex. They don't, and then you saw the same thing in Spokane. They're currently doing a year-long pilot where they said, cool, we're going to allow duplexes on every lot. So basically bringing them on par with where Boise is now. And then we're going to try out allowing triplexes and fourplexes on any lot for a year and see how it goes. So the fact that Boise, that was initially what Boise pitched. And then over the summer, they rolled it back and said, you know, we need to make sure that if we're building density, we're also building for affordable units, which is something mm-hmm. people wanted, and also really focusing the new density on these corridors that have other ways for people to get around, whether that's bike lanes, whether that's a bus, whether that's other, you know, walkability options, as opposed to saying density everywhere. They sort of went to a affordable, but also density where we have the infrastructure to support more people moving in different ways. And so I would say that this is a more moderate approach than mm-hmm. we've seen. The governor of Colorado just pitched a bill that would essentially do this on a statewide scale.
Wow.
I mean, that's huge.
Full disclosure here. And that is the reason why I wanted to bring the two of you on and talk about this is that I saw signs in parts of the city that said, stop upzoning Boise. And Dawn, I thought, I was like, I don't understand that. What does that mean? Like, what, you know, and I tend to think that I'm, you know, fairly intelligent. But I was like, what does this mean? And so talk to us about this organization who has this campaign. They're calling it upzoning. Margaret mentioned it in the earlier part of our conversation. But what are their big objections to this? Because I think, as Margaret mentioned, this is a much more moderate approach than what we're seeing in other states.
You know, it's really hard for me to characterize any one group or person's view. And I think, you know, that's something that they could represent best. Dave Kangas is leading that organization. This organization is made up of largely the same group of people who led the initiative against stadium expansion and Boise's library 4 years ago. And so that group called Boise Working Together has spawned, I would say, kind of an offshoot on this Reject Boise Upzone. And those signs, some of those signs, read zoned up, sold out, and shut up. The first part, what they're calling upzoning, is basically a common way to refer what we talked to in the first segment, where you're increasing the zoning, which means that more units mm-hmm. are going to be allowed on individual parcels. The sold out piece, I think, is interesting, because the claim that they're making, I believe, is that the city is selling its residents out to development interests. And then the shut up part, the last part there, is something that we haven't gotten into yet. And that is that the city is going to significantly decrease the amount of public input it takes on many development proposals. This means that there would be fewer proposals that go to public hearing. This would be fewer proposals that have to notify neighbors, and fewer things that ultimately reach even the city council. The city has essentially said, what they told us is, this friction, this need for hearings and long process makes development more expensive. And when you make development more expensive, the resulting units become more expensive. Whether or not that's fully true, I think, is hard to decide, especially because the market often sets the rates for both houses for sale and apartments. But there is certainly some truth to that the more expensive things are, the more expensive they're going to cost the consumer. But there is probably some genuine frustration that something right now that might have to have a hearing of planning and zoning would be made at an administrative level, meaning within the city's planning staff. So you've got these kind of three allegations or these three assertions, and there's definitely some frustration out there. The hard part, the thing that is always really difficult to tell, is, you know, how much frustration and how many people are upset. Organizers told me in late March that they'd put about they had about 300 yard signs requested. 300 yard signs is not insignificant, but I think it's important to remember that Boise has nearly 300,000 residents and more than 150,000 individual homes, and so as a percentage, that's small. But a lot of people aren't taking action, and so you don't really know. A project that we're working on and a story that we published earlier this month is we surveyed all 44 of Boise's neighborhood associations to get a sense really of what the ground feeling was. And, you know, you can read the story at boisedev.com, but I think that you'll see that there's a mix of opinions depending on the neighborhood association that run the gamut from some that are very much in support of the zoning code to some that are very much against the zoning code changes, and then a number that are neutral. And what you're going to see at Planning and Zoning starting tonight is that they have set four nights of hearings that start either at 4 o'clock tonight and then 5 o'clock the next three nights, go till 10 o'clock, where people are going to be able to come in and give testimony, say what they want. They're going to get about 3 minutes each to say their piece. And then the Planning and Zoning Commission will make a recommendation. And then we'll do this again in front of the city council at some point, probably later this spring. I would guess it's going to be summer before that happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Margaret, I'm assuming you will be at these meetings. And are you expecting to see a lot of, you know, opposition? Are you expecting to see a lot of folks in favor of this? And I only ask that question because I know that you cover these issues so often. Maybe you have an idea of the pulse of you know, how people are feeling.
Yeah, I think it's pretty split. A lot of people I talk to are coming around to this concept of, yeah, I am frustrated with Boise changing. I don't like it, but I also realize that my young kid can't find an apartment, and every time they apply, there's 50 people ahead of them on the waiting list. We need to add some more capacity so people can live here. And again, that concept goes with the fact that this idea of loosening zoning has taken, it's across the country now. People are embracing this concept. But at the same time, I do talk to a lot of people who are also opposed to it. I know the city has received a lot of comments against it. And the people who are most motivated to come out and these kinds of things are people who oppose ideas. No one looks at a concept and says, yeah, I think that's fine. I'm going to go testify at 9:45 at night on a Tuesday about it. You know, the people that are going to come out are usually the most fired up one way or the other. And so it wouldn't surprise me if we see a split or an edge to people that are opposed to it. But Don did allude to this idea of, we don't know the perceptions and the ideas of people who aren't there, people who aren't posting on social media, people who aren't writing in. I think there's a lot of people who are kind of unaware of this idea, or they're indifferent to it, or they're neutral on it. And so it'll be interesting to see what exactly happens, because this change will affect everyone, regardless of if they feel compelled to testify on it or not.
Mm-hmm. So with that said, Margaret, so who makes the final decision? Is it the Boise City Council? I mean, how does this work? And do we have any idea how they may be leaning on this?
So the Boise City Council is going to make the final call on this. And I think it's pretty safe to say that they are supportive of this idea. This has been in development by city staff. They have weighed in on it multiple times. You know, they have weighed in on it multiple times for years. We have been writing stories about this since before the pandemic, since when Mayor Beter was in office. This is something every single one of those council members has seen and provided extensive notes on. And at certain points, I remember even one meeting a couple years ago where they said, no, we want more. We want more housing than what you're even proposing. So the idea that they would maybe turn this down flat, that would surprise me. We might see some changes. We saw that during the housing bonus ordinance a couple years ago, where the argument that neighbors felt like these projects would be adding too much density into existing neighborhoods. City Council said, okay, and they amended and they sort of softened the proposal at the time before approving it. So maybe we'd see some tweaks there, maybe on public input or parking or some of these little details. But I think it's safe to say everyone up there has seen it, and they are likely ready to approve it nearly
Okay.
intact as it is.
Well, as always, I want to thank the two of you for walking us through this. There is a lot here, so really appreciate the breakdown of this to give us all a better understanding of it. We have, of course, been talking to Don Day, the founder and editor of BoiseDev.com, and Margaret Carmel, senior reporter with BoiseDev.com, discussing Boise's proposed new zoning code. The Planning and Zoning Commission will start 4 nights of public hearings on the new code tonight at Boise City Hall. Now, we will, of course, put a link to the Boise Dev stories on the zoning code on our website. I encourage you to read them so you really have a better knowledge of all of this. Our website, BoiseStatePublicRadio.org. I want to thank both of you again. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gemma.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
What if the greatest tragedy of your life was just covered up?
I've never seen anything like that before or after.
This is the story of the worst marine-on-marine friendly fire in modern history, a story kept from the public.
It's like, what did y'all have to hide?
Listen to NPR's Embedded podcast and its latest series, Taking Cover.